Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Welcome back to The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production here as we get closer and closer to the holidays, the Christmas holidays specifically, with a great guest today, and something you might want to consider as a one of those last-minute presents that you don't know what to get for that other person. It's Mark Tungate. Mark is actually in Paris, and he'll be talking to us from his home there. There's a bit of a time difference here between Paris and the central time zone, and so they're just about to have dinner. Actually, a late dinner in Paris. A very late dinner.
Right.
This thing airs.
Right.
But Mark is author of Adland, A Global History of Advertising. We also have, here in just a few moments, our regular contributor, the marketing insider, Patrick Meyer. It's called SWAT Teams. And a little bit later on this hour, it's Gene Bliss's The Customer Experience. And we'll find out what a chief customer officer is all about.
Hmm.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And we look forward to that as well. So, here we are in the studio. What do you got there?
Well, you know, holidays, and here we're right up on them, and we've got travel, and then more travel. American Express, according to their surveys from last year, the top 10 U.S. vacation destinations booked during the holiday seasons. A few of these are surprising, Ray.
You're going to say San Antonio is one of them.
Well, let me look here. Now, this was last year. This year, they may have San Antonio ranked. Florida was a hot spot, but number one was Los Angeles.
Really?
And I think this would probably be indicative of what you would expect to see this year as well. Close, I would imagine. Number two, Fort Lauderdale. Number three, Kahului, which is a main city on Maui and Hawaii.
Yeah.
Number four, New York. No surprise there. But here's where it gets, I think, kind of surprising. Miami, West Palm Beach. That's six and or five and six, and then
really?
Vail, Colorado. Why would you go up in the snow when it's going to be snowing probably in your neighborhood soon?
Well, yeah.
I suppose.
Unless you live in Miami.
That's true. And then Orlando, we're back to Florida again. And then Denver, back up in the snow.
Mm.
And then to round it out, and the number 10, this is kind of weird, Salt Lake City. I guess we need to go home to visit all those wives.
What is...
I'm joking. It's a
family
Mormon,
reunion
it's a Mormon
time.
Joke.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mormons, I wonder how our... Well, we don't want to get into politics here.
Presidential guy.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's a few surprises there. Apparently, Florida does better than I think most would have guessed there as far as travel.
Hmm. Fort Lauderdale actually didn't want the kids, for the spring break and
right.
all of the winter stuff because they created so much chaos there.
Right.
As if there's not enough chaos in Fort Lauderdale.
And, of course, kids now go to Mexico and other places.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Hmm.
I saw a list, a similar list, and it was talking about San Antonio as being one of the
top
prime destinations. And it's like, okay.
Why?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they do have the Riverwalk, and that's pretty, but...
pretty dirty.
But what else is there?
I don't know.
Well, obviously the Alamo. And all
that stuff. I heard they had a battle there.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And somebody won.
And you walk in there, if you've never been, you walk into the Alamo and you go, I was expecting more.
It's not a pretty small thing. Big place.
No.
They were littler people back then.
That's true.
Younger viewers, this is from the Hollywood Reporter. This is actually one of Alex's old stomping grounds that he did. But younger viewers spend more time trying to use technology to catch up on TV shows they've missed than older viewers, according to a Nielsen study. Study says 56% of adults 18-34 catch up on the shows they miss using digital video recorders, streaming web video, or other methods. The number dropped to 21% for viewers older than 55. That's because they can't figure out how to do them. No, actually, they've made it real easy. DVRs are a wonderful thing.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, what was it? I was watching on, I watched The Biggest Loser the other day. And they give these little tidbits about how to lose weight. They do it going into commercial and out of commercial. And you're supposed to guess what it is going into commercial. And they give the answer. And one of them was, how many calories would you burn if you did not use a remote?
So my question is, how many calories would you burn?
Well, that's a good question because I don't know. I use a remote and I can't remember what the answer was, but it was significant. It was like, 60 or 80 calories per segment, or I don't really remember, but I think the point is that, you know, if you in the old days when you used to get up and
you had to get up to do that when they didn't have remotes, but now I can't change the satellite without using a remote.
And when you didn't have a remote, you stayed on the channel and you didn't change it very often.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
So you watched the crap. It didn't matter.
I suppose the other part of that equation is what do you do during commercials and such as well? You know, if you're headed to the fridge for you're headed to the fridge to eat something, or you know, if you can speed past those breaks.
Well,
or
I always pause it and then I hope to get behind so I can just zip through it and not have to. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
and we're in advertising, so we shouldn't be doing that.
No, no.
But we're not a Nielsen family, so we don't count.
Never have been a Nielsen family.
No,
that's
me
for
neither.
Sure.
Yeah.
We've got who is this? This is Patrick Meyer. It's a thing called SWAT teams, and I'm sure it's not what it seems. That's usually the way it is with Patrick, right? Here it is.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Today I'm going to talk to you about marketing and advertising SWAT teams. I'm not talking military here or police. I was with one CMO recently, and he goes, Patrick, what I love about what you folks are doing it now is that you come in quick with seasoned people who can get it done. That's about SWAT teams. Ever see the classic movie, The Magnificent Seven? Done with Steve McQueen, Yul Brynner, amazing cast, inspiring movie. Well, that's what I'm talking about here, creating Magnificent Seven teams. When you've got a challenge or you've got an opportunity, instead of creating a 30-person group coming together in a think tank, or giving it off to the agency to work on for 8 weeks. Think differently, because speed is of the essence. Create a SWAT team of more than 10 people. Give them a challenge, set them up, give them the resources, but give them the latitude to go for it. We're taking this approach for an emerging tequila brand, and in 6 weeks, we're going to create an episodic marketing plan that will probably rock the category, coming at it differently in terms of driving word of mouth, different media approaches, different advertising approaches, and driving volume. If you're inside an agency, you should also think this way. When the client says we need different creative teams, don't think just a creative team. Think SWAT teams. How can you put together a 3, 4, or 5-person SWAT team that build ideas that are integrated ideas, not just advertising ideas? SWAT teams, fast, decisive, impact, very efficient, and get it done.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer as your Marketing Insider. And remember, the revolution is now. Hey, you want to know more? Go to nowinc.net or send me an email at patrick@nowinc.net.
Just about to hook up with Mark Tungate out of Paris. Mark, the author of the book, a brand new book called Adland, A Global History of Advertising. Really a cool book, too. You want to stay with us for that? We've got much more as we get into the holidays with you. Alex Ben Block, as we project ahead a couple of weeks here, is going to be with us to wrap up 07 and also tell us what's coming down the pike in 08 from the entertainment and marketing industry and such.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see the Dr. Pepper viral campaign? Apparently it was very successful for them. They have it on the web, and basically when Dr. Pepper wanted to get the word out about the newly introduced flavor, it's a brand new flavor called, I think, Cherry Chocolate Rain, which sounds actually weird, because Dr. Pepper is already flavored, as you say.
Yeah.
But they basically went to True Entertainment as opposed to going to Young and Rubicam, a production company based out of New York, to craft a viral video for the Cherry Chocolate Diet Dr. Pepper. Music video, it's called Cherry Chocolate Rain. It clocks in at 2:52, and it's the flavor of the month, according to Tay Zonde, better known as the guy who sings the song Chocolate Rain.
Hmm.
Very successful for them, and so basically, if you're not doing stuff like that and going away from your traditional agency, or at least asking them for something a little bit different, you ought to be doing that.
Right.
It's the way to do it. So I don't know. I didn't know whether you'd seen it or not.
I have not. And, you know, the young people, which is who they're targeting for the product entry like that, I'm sure they connected well with it, and it's a great idea. You know, we were talking about couch potatoes earlier, and apparently they're a phone service for cable TV companies are going to be coming in soon, and they're going to be offering caller ID on your TV screen, so you don't have to actually get up and look at your phone. You can see who's
talk
calling.
Talk about being lazy,
and
folks.
Just sit there.
That's
yeah.
not good. Stay
That's
with us much. For more on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids eat Armor?
Welcome back to The Advertising Show. As promised, a very special guest out of Paris. It is Mark Tungate, a British journalist based in Paris, where he has lived for the past 7 years. He specializes in media advertising and branding. Author of the book, the latest one, is called Adland, A Global History of Advertising, recently published by Kogan Page. Also the author of books from fashion brands and many, many more. But Mark, it is so nice of you to take some time out of your weekend here to join us at the Advertising Show.
Oh, no, it's absolutely my pleasure.
Yeah, and Mark, as Ray said, we're just truly honored to have you on the show. And for our listeners, they know that if we have an author on the show, we think highly of the book published by Kogan Page. Outstanding read. Both Ray and I enjoyed it, and thank your publisher for
sending. Oh, that's good. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I tried to make it entertaining as well as informative.
Well, if you're in the advertising business, marketing, client side, whatever, and you have an interest in advertising, this is truly a comprehensive look. Mark, I'm curious, the history of advertising, quite a feat, I would say. Where did you decide to begin when doing research for the subject?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually. Well, in a way, I wanted to start from the beginning. You can go back as far as, as you all know, you can go back as far as Roman times. There are bits of advertising found in the ruins of Pompeii. So I've kind of mentioned that, but I realized that, there aren't too many around people around to interview from that period, obviously. So that would be, for research purposes, that makes life quite difficult.
Examine their bones, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I did find a guy who was an expert on, who's based in London, who was an expert on Victorian advertising, although obviously he wasn't around at the time, but he's the kind of specialist in the field. So I sort of started with him, really, because certainly in Britain, in any case, advertising really began with the Industrial Revolution and the sort of beginnings of branding, and that's when we first saw advertising appear in any kind of impactful form. And it emerged about the same sort of time in France and in the United States as well, and in other pockets around Europe. So really you're talking the 19th century, sort of mid to late 19th century, in fact. Mm-hmm. So that's where I decided to start. But in terms of writing a book about advertising from a global perspective, I was a bit daunted by it, and I didn't quite know how I was going to start. But once I got rolling, it seemed to form a kind of pattern, and I managed to cobble together some semblance of a guide, I think, for people.
Yeah, and before we get into more content from your book, I assume you're interested and familiar with, I'm not interested, but I assume you're familiar with the big hit TV program Mad Men that's on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Funnily enough, the BBC have just bought it. We haven't had it in England yet, or in France. The BBC have just bought it, so that means it's going to be shown in England very soon, and I guess it will be shown in France. So I've only been able to see it through the internet, actually.
Right.
But I think it's a terrific show.
Yeah, and then for someone that's researched the subject, I should say, and for those not familiar with the program, Madison Avenue during the so-called golden age of advertising, mm-hmm. a great series. What's your take on the program? How much of what you see on the show, Mark, do you think is accurate?
Well, it's got to be an exaggerated version, like any kind of drama. I mean, there's got to be a sort of element of fiction. But it seems to me, when I was talking to some of the people who remember that era, or at least who worked on the fringes of that era, I spoke to George Lois, for instance, who you know of course, and to Phil Dusenberry, who started working on Madison Avenue in the 60s. And certainly some of the anecdotes they told me gel very nicely with the kind of things we're seeing on the series. So although it's obviously exaggerated for the purposes of storytelling, I think there's probably more than a grain of truth in what went on. And actually, you know, for us, for Europeans, Madison Avenue in the 1950s/60s is really the beginning of advertising as a sort of glamorous profession. And I was certainly interested in exploring that era when I was writing the book.
Yeah, and you mentioned Lois and Dusenberry and others, and we've had the honor of speaking with them here on the Advertising Show. When I first picked up your book, Mark, I noticed on the back cover a reference to many luminaries and influentials in the business of which you cite and share interviews with. Any particular moments that were memorable for you in interviewing giants such as not only Lois and Dusenberry, but Keith Reinhardt and Sir Martin and others?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were all great, actually. I mean, all the people that actually gave me their time were already into the project, so obviously they were willing to spend some time with me and chat about their lives and their work in detail. I mean, one of the things that struck me, actually, is that advertising people are very passionate. You know, I think people who don't work in advertising or don't really know the profession seem to think that they're kind of frustrated writers or frustrated artists, but the people I met were not in any way frustrated. They were just passionate, committed advertising people. And people like Keith Reinhardt, that's certainly the case. Various other people, John Hegarty, the great UK ad man from Basil Bogle Hegarty in London, is always a great interview, very affable guy, and thoroughly enjoyed talking to him as well. But excuse me, but everybody was charming that I spoke to, actually, even when I was asking them sometimes quite tough questions.
Mm-hmm. I know this is not your first book. You wrote a book on fashion brands as well as the media industry. What was the inspiration for Adland?
Well, actually, it's a funny story which I recount in the book. I mean, I've written about advertising on and off for 15 years, and journalists, I think, are always attracted to the business of advertising. You'll see in the book that many of the characters I feature actually were journalists. Ray Rubicam started out, or certainly did some journalism. Albert Lasker wanted to go into journalism. I think Claude Hopkins' dad was a journalist. And so there's a sort of link between journalism and advertising. Advertising is a kind of kindred industry, I think. So there was that aspect. As a journalist, I was fascinated by advertising as a profession. And also, it was purely because I thought that there was a niche for this kind of book. I was covering an advertising festival in Georgia, in the former Soviet Union, of all places, and I met this guy who was a kind of political correspondent, come war reporter, kind of a cool guy. He'd been in Chechnya, and we were chatting outside a bar, and I was saying, well, you know, my job, I write about advertising, is much less glamorous and dangerous than yours. And he said, well, you know, advertising's really interesting because it's a good indicator of how an economy is doing, and, you know, the trading spirit remains very strong in people, even in times of war. So I'd be interested in reading a book about the history of advertising. Can you recommend one? And my mind sort of went blank.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that a lot of the books I'd read about advertising were either kind of advertising agency chiefs writing about their own agencies or their own theories, if you liked, or were very country-specific. There's a great book by Stephen Fox, The Mirror Makers, which is about American advertising, and there's a similar book about British advertising. But nobody had really tackled it from an international perspective, and that's what I rather foolishly decided to do.
Yeah, and most of what we read, it's a slice in the times of advertising and marketing for that particular period. And I like you and Ray, we were talking about your book before going on today, have not seen a book that takes more of a global approach. And gosh, 2007, global marketing and advertising, it's really where everything is going. And next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about how you went about the thought process of organizing the content for your book, because it's very well organized. And again, for those looking for a Christmas gift for a person in the advertising field or just a gift
exactly.
for yourself.
Exactly. What a great time, too, to do that. Mark Tungay, the British journalist based in Paris, is our special guest, author of the brand-new book called Adland, A Global History of Advertising. We've got Mark for a couple more segments here, and you're right, that is a great idea for Christmas gift-giving. With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, the advertising show being powered by Shipple.com, and the platform is called Tendency. It's an incredible marketing platform, very powerful. Matter of fact, don't try that at home. That'd be a good idea. So check it out, Shipple.com. And we've got more with the Mark and Ray and Brad here in just a minute on the advertising show.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You're like no other babe ever born.
You're fabulous, babe.
You know how to reach out and show your love, babe.
You're fabulous, babe.
You're one of the boys, but you are a real girl, baby.
Welcome back to the Advertising Show. The book is called Adland, A Global History of Advertising, including brand new interviews with many of the key players, as we've been talking about, who shaped the world of advertising from the 50s onwards, including Phil Dusenberry, George Lois, good friend of ours. If George would have had anything to do with the show Mad Men, it probably...
He couldn't air it.
No, he couldn't air it.
No.
But, yeah, absolutely. Too much cussing. Yeah, I noticed that.
but it's quite interesting perspective. And it's Mark Tungate, based in Paris, and that's where we're talking to him from this weekend. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the Advertising Show. Welcome back.
Thanks. Well, me too.
Yeah, and, you know, we mentioned before the break your book and the content there, and just a huge undertaking here tackling the topic of advertising history. And some of the chapters, Pioneers of Persuasion, From Propaganda to Soap, Madison Avenue, Creative Revolutionaries, et cetera, et cetera. How did you go about deciding how to best organize the book for readers?
Yeah, it's a good question. It got more difficult as it went along, actually, because to start with, I organized it purely on a kind of historic basis. You know, it just moves forward in time. But then, of course, it gets more complicated because there's a sort of ripple effect, in fact. I mean, right up until the Creative Revolution, I was more or less concentrating on America and the United Kingdom, where there were kind of parallel movements, and mentioning in various asides places like France and Italy. So, you know, it's quite an obvious progression until you get to the 1950s. And then when the Creative Revolution happens on Madison Avenue, the Creative Revolution seems to sort of explode outwards. And if you can imagine the sort of ripple effect of that explosion, it sort of washes across the Atlantic to the UK first. And our Creative Revolution really happened in the sort of late 60s, early 70s. There's an agency called CDP, which was very important for the future of advertising in England at that time. And a lot of people who worked at that agency were inspired by Bill Birnbach and the revolutionaries at DDB. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then the ripple effect carries on and kind of washes over the rest of Europe. And then it kind of hits Asia later on, as in the sort of 1980s. And then it kind of doubles back to embrace Eastern Europe when, obviously, after the end of the communist era. And then and then, of course, you know, after all that, then you get the beginning of the digital revolution, which we're experiencing now. And to a certain extent, China is experiencing both revolutions at the same time. So it's very interesting for them.
You know, talking about the Creative Revolution, since it was such a significant event, in the advertising history, I'm curious, did you have to cull that section down a bit? I was expecting that section to be a bit bigger.
Yes, I suppose so. Well, I thought that it had been covered by a lot of people. I thought it was one of the things that had been already very well documented. And to a certain extent, I didn't want it to dwarf the rest of the book. And also, I suppose I'm working from a slightly European stroke UK bias. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was able to keep a distance, you know, and to sort of really hone it down to the key elements that I wanted to capture. But certainly, I mean, you could write an entire book about the Creative Revolution, and people have. So I think that's why perhaps I don't devote as much time to it as other people have done, and as indeed I could have done.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I think you tackled the subject in a very interesting and different way. And of all the creative revolutionaries you discuss in your book, who do you think, Mark, has had the biggest impact on the advertising industry today? Is there a way to narrow it down to just one or two?
It's still Bill Birnbach, really. People still talk about him. Here in France, you know, you go to agencies, Bill Birnbach's book is still on the shelves of agencies. All the people who created the sort of English revolution in the 1970s were disciples of Birnbach. And for me, he was really the person who sparked off the creative revolution and was, a guru to lots of people. To a certain extent, David Ogilvy as well, very important from a copywriting point of view. And as a journalist, I certainly appreciate his way of turning a phrase. Although he didn't consider himself to be either creative or particularly revolutionary, he just considered himself to be the ultimate professional ad man. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a bit unfair to compare him to Birnbach. But for those are two definitely seminal figures in the history of advertising for me and for everybody, I think.
Yeah, and curious, from a global perspective, and this is just kind of getting your way in on this, when it comes to innovation in advertising, is there any one particular country or geographical region of the world, Mark, that tends to get a little overlooked when it comes to innovation in advertising?
Well, I think now, I spent a lot of time in Japan, actually, because I wanted to look at Dentsu, which is, after all, one of the biggest advertising agencies in the world, and I think it's number 5 or 6, but you can check that. But and I think it tends to be overlooked a bit because it does seem quite mysterious and impenetrable to outsiders. And I think about Japanese advertising, as you know, TV advertising spots in Japan are just 15 seconds long, which you know, 5 years ago seemed like a complete anomaly, something that we wouldn't be interested in at all. But now, of course, with advertising on mobile portable devices, the shorter an ad is, the more impactful it is. So a lot of agencies, certainly here in Europe, are looking to Japan for that model. And I think, you know, more innovation is coming out of there than it's given credit for. And other Asian countries like Thailand, Thai advertising does incredibly well at the advertising festival in Cannes. And that's very imaginative and has a sort of bizarre, slightly surreal sense of humor. So I think those are a couple of places where we can see trends emerging. And I think they sometimes are overlooked.
And the same trends coming here this way. Look at Clear Channel's initiative as well. Adland, A Global History of Advertising. Our special guest out of Paris this weekend is Mark Tungate, British journalist. By the way, we want to pass along, Mark also has a blog. It's called brandedmail.com. And Tungate in Paris is the website you'd like to check out as well. Another segment with Mark. We've got that coming up here on The Advertising Show.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Burgess is a darn good battery.
In my hand, I have a Burgess battery, the darn good battery, and that other battery. Now, tell me what I am doing.
You just dropped the other battery.
You're great classic spot there. It's a Chuck Bloor spot, right? Yeah, as I remember back. Yes, it is, Brad. The book is called Adland, A Global History of Advertising. It's also called The Story of the Best Advertising, Told with the Accuracy of the Best Journalism and with the Style of the Best Literature. And it's Mark Tungate's publication, as he joins us once again for one more segment here out of Paris on The Advertising Show.
Yeah, you
Mark,
know, I didn't actually write that line on the cover there. A famous ad man wrote that. Obviously, I had to pay him, but...
Still collecting royalties.
We'll say his name, Washington Oliveto.
Yeah, exactly. Washington Oliveto, one of my favorite ad men, a Brazilian ad man. And Brazil is a very interesting market as well. You have lots of talented people coming out of that country and making fantastic advertising as well. Marcelo Serpa is another guy who I really respect, who's a terrific Brazilian ad man.
Yeah, well, let's take advantage of the fact that our guest today is out of Paris and living in Paris. I'm sure French advertising has a special place in your heart, Mark. A little bit about French advertising, if you will. What makes it different?
Well, that's an interesting thought, actually, because I've always thought that there is an advantage and a disadvantage to French advertising. The advantage of French advertising is that all the luxury brands are based in Paris, or a lot of them, you know, Louis Vuitton, Chanel, etc. And so the French have developed a sort of an expertise in luxury advertising. They make everything look glossy, fantastic, glamorous. It's very product-oriented. But the problem that they have is that they take almost any item and promote it that way. So, you know, sometimes you have the feeling they could take any very basic product and turn it into a luxury product. You know, I've seen luxury advertising for supermarkets, the Air France ads, which are made by the agency Euro RSCG, actually do look more like ads for perfume. So, you know, it's all very glossy and sensual and just very darn Parisian, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So how do people in France view American advertising?
I think American advertising is considered to be a bit more salesmanship. I think that the French and the British are a bit like this as well. They're a bit frightened of being directly sold to. They like it somehow to be wrapped up in either a joke in England or as I say, in this kind of glamour and luxury in France. And I think that they're a bit jealous of American agencies who can kind of sell a bit more overtly, and that because, you know, America is a very capitalist, democratic society, that advertising is not considered a bad thing, and that people aren't ashamed of selling or indeed being sold to. So I think sometimes the kind of French Catholic, you know, we don't like talking about money too much thing can make advertisers a bit shy about really selling, you know.
That's interesting. So would we assume that accountability in advertising, ROI and things such as this, that's a big, big subject here in the U.S. and has been for many years, is not such an issue there in Europe?
No, I think it is an issue, absolutely. And I think there is this kind of idea of transparency. In fact, with what's going on with the European Union, or the European Commission, there are many laws regulating advertising in France and across Europe, particularly in terms of what you can do with alcohol, cigarettes, that kind of thing. And it can be quite tough. I mean, as it is, I know in the States, but it can be quite tough to sell overtly in France, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly a lot of the creative and interesting advertising that we see, we look back at what we see in Europe, and we think you guys get by with a lot more than we do here. And maybe you're exactly right, being a little more straightforward and less clever. I'm not putting down the entire industry, but you see a much more straightforward approach to selling through advertising, and it's a little more, I think, wrapped in a creative package than what we see in Europe. For a moment, before we get back to the serious subjects here, if they say that prostitution is the world's oldest business, does that make advertising the world's oldest service industry, Mark?
Well, they say that one of the oldest ads was found, as I said earlier, in the ruins of Pompeii, and apparently it was an ad for a brothel. So it means that those two professions have been working side by side for many years, by the sound of it.
I think I saw that room.
Back then it was direct mail, wasn't it, Brad?
I saw that room in Pompeii and spent a few minutes there.
That's funny. Hey, Mark, we are unfortunately out of time here.
But okay, well, I'm out of breath because I'm suffering from this cold and I can feel my throat beginning to clam up. So
there you go.
It's a relief.
Good time to wrap. Adland, A Global History of Advertising. Go get it. Go get it for the people who love advertising and marketing. It'll be a treasured gift. And we wish you continued success with the book and the other ventures that you pursue.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
You got it, Mark.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
I love Bosco. It's rich in chocolate tea. Chocolate-flavored Bosco is mighty good for me.
Well, shoot, they could have put some of that Dr. Pepper stuff, some Bosco in there. Some would have done the same thing. Dropped a cherry, it'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Katerina. It is Katerina Scoburn coming up next week. She is the founder and the group managing director of Open Ad, basically, and we'll find out more about that as we go into that interview. And did you say she was out of the country? She's here, or
she's
where?
They're based out of Europe, and it's openad.net if you want to visit the site. But mm-hmm. she's a founder, and it's a great new concept, very interesting concept, along the lines of, and we've covered it before here, Spot Runner and picks and clicks and other new technology-based platforms for, in this case, creative and campaigns. And it's a really interesting concept. We're going to share that with you.
She studied electrical engineering, which is a natural transformation into an ad person.
Yeah.
She began her career in the media in 93, a Slovenian ad agency. Now, what would you think? You wouldn't think of anything creative. It's called the Vision Factory. But
right.
So it sounds like she's got some interesting things to say.
Yeah, and one final note, a big thank you to Mark Tungate, author of Adland, great book. Go to Amazon.com, pick up a copy, and Kogan Page, the publisher. Great job, Mark.
Okay, good. Let's take a moment out here and talk with Gene Bliss, our customer experience type person who provides us with some great features every week here on the Advertising Show. As we said before, this one is called The Chief Customer Officer. Let's find out.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Of course, delivering a great client and customer experience is one of your top priorities. The question is, how do you accomplish this? Some companies are bringing on a chief experience or chief customer officer to drive the action. Ask yourself these questions to find out if this is something to consider. Is there a team or individual who clarifies what you need to accomplish with customers? Do you have a process for bringing everyone together to agree on budgets, resources, and how you'll collectively work to solve the customer issues? Do you have a clear process to drive alignment across your company for what needs to be accomplished? Is a roadmap in place which stages the action and drives accountability at key intervals? If you answered no to any of these questions, you are absolutely not alone. You might want to consider a person or a team to move things forward. This is Gene Bliss reminding you your customers are the most valuable asset of your business.
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Thank you, Gene, as always, here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And thanks again to our very special guest today, Mark Tungate, out of Paris. You are holding something there.
Well, you know, this is one of those faux pas, staying with a French word there. Associated Press via Fox News reports that one New York grocer ended up in embarrassment after its ads touted hams as delicious for Hanukkah. The eight-day Jewish holiday began earlier this week, but pork products, of course, are not allowed under the Judaism dietary rules. A woman who saw the ad for Balducci's, which is a very well-known grocer there in Manhattan, took pictures of the ad and promptly posted them online. Jennifer Barton, director of marketing for the store, says that the ad was changed as soon as they found out about the problem and apologized on the company's website, adding it would soon review its employee training manual. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
It's almost like, and we should bring that back more often, the good advertising, bad advertising stuff.
Yeah.
That would be good advertising turned, or bad advertising turned into good advertising, I guess.
I don't know how you make a mistake like that. I mean, there was a big deal about how someone had an advertising circular out in a number of millions. It was like Target or somebody like that. I'm not saying that it was Target. Yeah. And they were promoting the one of these products that have been recalled because of the problem that children have a reaction to. Again, I don't want to propagate or promote some problems that manufacturers in the U.S. have had.
Right, right.
But it came out as to, why would you be promoting a product that's been recalled and off the market? Well, there's an upfront time to promote producing flyers and getting them out to millions of people across America, and that's how it happened. It was already, you know, in the pipeline and out. So, and they made a big apology. And I think it's really not so much how you make a mistake, but that you do make a mistake, but how you recoup and apologize about those kind of errors.
Speaking of apologies, Don Imus back on the radio and on the TV.
And leads with an apology.
Yeah, you know, Don, it's okay. It's over. Move on.
Right.
It's an interesting lineup that he has, too. We watched the show this past, I guess it was this past week.
And on what cable was that?
RFD TV.
Right. Can't believe that. Right between the tractor pull and the bullfighting.
Actually, it was Big Joe's polka show, which apparently they pulled Big Joe or Tiny Joe or whatever his name is, poor guy.
Right.
Anyway, to replace him with Imus.
Wow.
That's interesting. So,
something to be known for.
The Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit them online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.